Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, September 14th, 2017, and we're getting closer and closer to week two of the regular season when the Packers will travel down to Atlanta and open Mercedes-Benz Stadium for a rematch of the NFC Championship game against the Atlanta Falcons. Of course, they carry a 1-0 record into that game after defeating the Seattle Seahawks Sunday afternoon. And we will be getting you ready for that game all week long on JS Online and PackersNews.com. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. And I'm joined, as always, by colleague Tom Silverstein. Tom, it's the middle of the week. It's Thursday morning. We're getting closer.
I don't have my game face on yet. I'm still working on it.
Do we need to promote someone from the practice squad?
We might. We might. Yeah, I think I probably could use some good backup help.
Well, the Packers could use some good backup help along their offensive line.
That's for sure.
That is an interesting situation right now because what might have been a strength based on pure numbers when they put together their 53-man roster is suddenly a big issue. Run everybody through what's going on there right
well,
now.
Well, it's not an issue if they don't have any more injuries. It's one of those things where you hope, if you're the Packers, you hope that everything stays status quo. So even right now, it starts with Brian Bulaga, who we know missed the game against Seattle with an ankle injury. We're waiting to find out whether he's coming back, but nobody, at least here publicly other than the Packers, knows because he was ill today and didn't even come to the facility, so we don't know what he would have done at practice. I assume the Packers are going to try to get him ready. They'll do the same thing they did last week. They'll take it right up to the game and see whether he's ready. If he's not, then Kyle Murphy starts. Okay, that's all well and fine. Murphy did okay, although I think this is going to be a really big challenge for him because now he's got some film out there that teams can dissect. He's playing indoors, on the road. That's a problem. So while he did a pretty decent job, it's not a slam dunk he'll hold up. Anyway, then you go to Jason Spriggs, who injured his hamstring. So there goes your backup left tackle. And then David Bakhtiari shows up on the injury report with a hamstring injury. So now you're like one extra pulled hamstring away from disaster where you're trying to decide if Kyle Murphy's your left tackle or Adam Pinkey, who was called up from the practice squad, is your left tackle. What they should do is if Bakhtiari gets hurt, they should just pull up a white flag and go home. Just forget it. Just don't even risk getting Rodgers hurt or anybody else. Or just take a knee every time you have the ball.
Well, the last time Bakhtiari was hurt was my first season here, and that was the debacle in Arizona where Barkley gave up like four sacks, and then after that they tried Josh Sitton against Minnesota, and then after that they tried J.C. Tretter in the playoffs, and it was just a mess. And so, like you said, if Bulaga can't play and nobody else gets hurt, you know, even if Murphy struggles, it's not, you know, the complete end of the world. Mm-hmm. It's just if there's another injury, and especially if Bakhtiari's hamstring gives out, then it goes to code red disaster mode.
Absolutely.
And I don't know what they would do. I really don't. I mean, I guess you could flip Kyle Murphy to left tackle, and what did he tell you about, you know, that possibility?
He has been taking some snaps at left tackle, but you have to remember during training camp his focus was right tackle because that's what they were getting him ready for, and Spriggs was getting ready for left tackle. He took some snaps at left tackle last week, said he'll know more tomorrow or today, Thursday, about whether he's going to take more snaps at left tackle. They'll probably know more about Bulaga at that point.
The interesting thing about Spriggs is that his injury did not look good at all when you watch the film of it. He played one snap on special teams against Seattle, and it was an extra point by Mason Crosby. He's on the right side of the line and the left side, as you see it on the TV screen, and he's trying to block K.J. Wright, one of the linebackers for Seattle. And for whatever reason, he kind of goes really low, almost dives at KJ Wright's knees a little bit. And Wright ends up falling on top of his back. And as soon as Spriggs tries to get up a little bit once the play is over, you can see him grab at his left hamstring immediately, and then he topples over in pain. You know, we saw him the last couple days in the locker room. He doesn't walk with any sort of a ridiculous limp, but no. Mike McCarthy said it's going to be at least a couple weeks, and they still don't know at this point whether or not it's long-term concern. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen with Corey Linsley, hamstring problems can be super problematic. He tore it twice and ended up missing half the season. And even still, he was walking okay, even with the torn hamstring. So yeah. It could be a big problem there. You know, so with Pankey, I know you talked to him at the end of camp. Where does he fit best if forced into duty now that he's on the 53?
Well, he played guard in college, some tackle. He's built like a tackle. He looks more like a tackle than he does a guard. But guard is his natural position. And when we saw him in the preseason, when he played tackle, he wasn't very good. When he played guard, he was a lot better, especially when he played left guard. So, you know, I just cannot imagine they think of him as a backup left tackle, and I'm sort of surprised they signed him as opposed to somebody else.
Somebody that's not here.
I mean, the kid's got some, he's huge and he's got athletic ability, but if you were to throw him out there in the Georgia Dome or the Gunter Dome or whatever we want to call it, the Mercedes-Benz Dome, that would be asking for disaster. I'm like, why don't you just play Martellus Bennett at left tackle? I think he could actually do a pretty decent job. So it's a concern if they have an injury, and we've seen it. It's happened before. So
if Don Barclay were healthy, do you think that it would be a situation where they'd flip Murphy to left tackle and then put Barclay at right?
Yes.
Or would they trust Barclay to play left tackle
again?
Well,
they might try it that way, but they've seen Don Barclay, and he's had left tackle. He's tried left tackle, and it just didn't work. So I think they'd go with Murphy first.
One thing that I'm curious to see about next week is how much do they view this week as just let's try and survive Sunday and then figure out what happens next week? And the reason I bring that up is because if Spriggs' injury turns out to be somewhat significant, then you're still in this perpetual situation of not having a backup left tackle.
Yeah.
So do you try and just roll the dice and hope that you're healthy before Sunday and then make a more significant move to bring in somebody next week? I mean, at some point you have to address that situation. I don't know what they would do, but You can't go too many weeks without a left tackle.
No, you can't. You can't. Now, I think what they're thinking is that Bulaga's injury, you know, he'll be back, if not this week, then the following week, and he could play left tackle if they needed it. But, and that would be in a backup situation. Again, you know, something would have to happen to Bakhtiari. I just think that, you know, you could roll the dice in this game and say, okay, well, if it doesn't work out, fine. But this is a pretty big game, especially if they're going to try to win home field advantage. They passed their first test with Seattle, and they need to go out and win this game because it's gonna most likely determine who has home field advantage.
And 2 weeks from now, three and a half weeks from now, they have Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the other big test in the first six, seven games of the year.
Right.
So the last big test was the NFC Championship game. That's the last time these two teams played. Last season, it was the blowout, as everybody remembers. It was never really competitive beyond the first half of the first quarter.
Not till Aaron Ripkowski fumbled.
Exactly.
Right into the end zone.
So what's, I mean, when you think back about that game, what jumps out to you right away? I know what it is for me. It's a particular image from late in the first half. Is there anything that you remember specifically?
What I remember was on the opening kickoff, Kentrell Bryce goes down and pops a guy. I mean, you know, just exactly what you want. And just as had been the case almost every week, he's out of the game, you know. And they just did not have enough players to compete in that game. They had too many guys who were hurt. They had Jordy Nelson was hurt. Geronimo Allison was hurt.
Davante Adams
was hurt. Lang was limping around on a
broken foot. Still recovering from the broken foot.
You know, God, there. You know, Randall was like half a speed he was. Rollins was, you know, not running very well. Just go up and down the line. They had no players left, and they weren't deep enough to beat Atlanta or go to the Super Bowl regardless. But that's what I remember, is that here you go, and they got one guy who's actually been healthy and been playing pretty well, and boom, there he goes, first play of the game. And then it just went downhill from there.
The thing I remember is sort of a smaller example of what you just said, and that is right before the end of the first half, you know, the Packers are already down big, and Atlanta drives all the way down, two-minute drill, and it's first down, second down, and the Packers survive inside the five-yard line. And then third down comes up, and they throw this back shoulder fade to Julio Jones, and Ladarius Gunter can't come close to it. And you can see, you know, Clinton Dix, I think, was the safety on that side, and he comes over to try and say, you know, well, Julio Jones didn't get his feet down. And Gunter just makes no protest. He knows it was a touchdown. He just puts his head down and walks off the field. And that's an example of it. They had no corners left, and so you're playing a guy that was your number four or five corner to start the season against Julio Jones in the NFC Championship game. And you know, Gunter never – he's a guy that always played as hard as he possibly could.
He got the most out of what talent he had.
Just didn't have enough.
And, well, so what does it say? He's gone. He got cut yesterday. That was, to me, kind of a surprising move. I actually thought they would cut Josh Hawkins before they cut Gunter. But
why is that?
Because I think Gunter's a better player. I think he's a better cornerback. But everything is about speed with these guys now. Everything is about speed in the secondary, speed on defense. And we're going to find out whether that makes them a more competitive team, because that's what beat them against Atlanta, was a lack of speed and a lack of, you know, players. But speed was really a big difference in the game.
Because they carried seven corners on the 53, getting rid of Gunter still leaves them with six, which is the number they went into last season with. But I was wondering if you thought it was a little bit peculiar, just in general, that they tried to trim from the cornerback spot, knowing, A, that at least three of their top four guys still have not proven that they can be consistent and play at a high level, and B, the amount of injuries that they have there with some guys that have some injury problems. I just wondered if, you know, it defeated the purpose of carrying the extra guy because you just got rid of him after a week.
Maybe, but I think they feel pretty good about Donatello Brown, who's on their practice squad. I think him and Lindsey Pipkins were one, you know, 7A and 7B.
Right.
I also think they felt like, okay, Randall has passed his test. He's now playing okay. And Rollins actually, and we need to do this as a feature, I think, on this podcast, is when we make, after we make an assessment after the game and then we go and watch it on tape, we have to go back and revise one thing that we said on that podcast. Because one of the things I said was that Rollins blew a couple of contains, and I went back and watched it, and it wasn't him. It was Devon House on that long run. Rollins actually played pretty well, all in all, and Randall did too. So I think they feel pretty good about their corners. House still has a lot to prove. He was really rusty and didn't play all that well, could have given up a couple of touchdowns. So they're much deeper, they're much faster, and now we find out what that means.
So that brings us to the next topic. We know what they tried last year against Julio Jones twice, and that was Ladarius Gunter. The first time he got a ton of help over the top in week 8, and he actually held Julio Jones in check, relatively speaking. Now, of course, Julio Jones, I think, had, what was it, a toe injury or something that game where he was in and out of the lineup.
Yeah.
And then in the NFC Championship game, they essentially did the same thing, but Gunter had less help, and it was more of a one-on-one type deal, and obviously that went up in flames. What do you think they might try this weekend?
I think, why mess with a good thing? I think what they're going to do, I think Well, I'm speaking from Atlanta's standpoint. Were you asking me what the Packers are
going to
do?
Yeah, what the Packers will do for Julio.
They're going to put Clinton Dix over the top wherever Jones goes. Clinton Dix will be standing over the top. Now, that's good, and it will, you know, it's a bracket type of coverage, but what Atlanta does is put him in the slot.
Yes.
And then they run these crossing routes where Clinton Dix can't get over there on a crossing route to double him up. And so what I think they have to do, and I talked about this with Leroy Butler on X's and O's. You can get that on our website if you want. But the inside linebackers have to get their hands on Jones when he's crossing the middle. I mean, they have to, if he's shallow enough, they got to bump him out of those routes. Now, then Atlanta will counter and run Sanu behind them. But, you know, you have to pick your poison there, and you're the most lethal is Julio Jones. So they got to figure out how to maybe zone that off and when he crosses, or just get physical. I mean, I know you can't really get too physical with him, but just wherever he goes, give him some kind of sign that you're not going to just fall down in front of him.
I wonder if this is a game where Joe Thomas plays a little bit more than he did against Seattle. You know, he and Jake Ryan played five snaps apiece, and instead it was Blake Martinez that was in there for, you know, essentially the whole game alongside Morgan Burnett. Now, one of the things we've discussed on this podcast during training camp, and even dating back to last season, Bob and I discussed it, is some of the deficiencies that Blake Martinez has shown in coverage, especially against play action. Now, first of all, I don't necessarily think you want to get in situations where Blake Martinez is chasing Devontae Freeman or Tevin Coleman around with the speed that they have. And so even though it makes you less stout against the run, I wonder if Joe Thomas plays a larger role simply because he can move a little bit better with these backs in those situations. What do you think?
Maybe, but I also think that because they're going to probably play a lot of nitro.
Right.
That, you know, maybe Martinez doesn't get as exposed, that they can find a way where Burnett actually ends up covering some of those guys. And then I also wonder, why not get Josh Jones involved here just because of his size and speed.
Yeah.
Now, they are difficult. The way they scheme, they could make mincemeat out of him. But on the other hand, maybe he's the kind of guy who can help you chase down Julio Jones
right.
on those crossing routes. He can get physical with some of those guys. He's fast enough and big enough to do it.
The reason I mentioned Joe Thomas is because of what I saw when I went back and watched the Falcons and Bears from last weekend. Their number one tight end is Austin Hooper,
mm-hmm.
and they split him out so much. He did some stuff in line, but he did a ton of stuff split out, similar to what the Packers do, honestly, with Martellus Bennett.
Yeah. Yep.
And so I wondered if in those situations, if Burnett is going to be there the same way he was with Graham, and then all of a sudden you've got Martinez alone in the middle of the field it's against a running back.
Very possible.
So that was what made me think maybe Joe Thomas, but I mean, Josh Jones would fit perfectly in that spot.
Well, yes. And, you know, the other thing is, why not, and we're talking about passing downs mostly, but play your dime defense and cover the running back with a defensive back,
yeah.
a cornerback. And maybe Josh Jones is your dime linebacker instead of Joe Thomas.
Joe Thomas, yeah.
Joe Thomas, he can cover some ground, but it's not like he hasn't been beaten either. So you have to kind of decide. The early downs are going to be the biggest challenge because that's where the chess match is.
Right.
Is Atlanta going to do a lot of play action and try to get those backs in matchups, or are they going to try to run it, or are they just going to get it to Julio Jones? Third down, you can bring in your dime personnel, and the Packers have a better chance with all those cornerbacks.
We didn't see a whole ton of dime against Seattle. They played so much nitro that they didn't really have to. And one of the things that I think is yet to be seen is what they do with their defensive backs in dime. Because last season, whatever the combination of corners was, there was three of them, and then Morgan Burnett was the fourth that they moved into the slot. But now if they wanted to, they could put Devon House on one side, Kevin King on the other, Randall in one slot, Rollins in the other, and then keep Burnett and Clinton Dix back. Yeah. Do you think they'll do that, or do you think they like Burnett in the slot so much that they'll just stick him there?
I think they have to think about that. Now, you know, the Nitro is a dime defense to some degree because there's six defensive backs. It's just that Burnett is functioning as a linebacker. I do think on third downs they do need to go to a dime with Burnett back covering.
And so that takes Bryce off the field. Do you think they'd be okay with that?
Sure. I mean, why not? I would replace Bryce with Kevin King.
Exactly. Yep.
That's basically what you're doing. And you're also setting up a situation where Rollins and Randall can blitz off the slots and get after Ryan. So I would suspect that's the way they'll go. You never know.
Based on what you talked about during training camp when we were discussing all the different blitzes that Dom was showing in certain games, we sort of thought that that slot blitz would be a staple for them. Mm-hmm. They really didn't do that much against Seattle. Was there a reason for that?
They didn't have to with Perry and Daniels just destroying the line. It's like, why blitz? I went and counted the number of times they sent five guys, and that's not really even always a blitz. It's sometimes base personnel. And it was only 10 times, you know, 10 out of 34 rushes.
Which for Dom is very unusual.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have either. I mean, I would have flooded the secondary and let Perry and Daniels go after him. Now, that's going to be a different animal this time. I mean, Jake Matthews and Alex Mack. They're good enough to put up a fight, but I do want to see how Nick Perry does, whether he can have the kind of game he did. He had a monster game. Mike Daniels got a lot of the credit, and deservedly so, but Nick Perry just dominated Seattle's left tackle. So
I don't know if anybody would have been happier watching that than Russ Ball and Ted, knowing they dished out so much money to this guy. And the first game he plays, maybe even better than he played all of last season. It was really impressive.
Yeah, and he didn't get hurt.
Very true.
You know, so we'll see how long that lasts.
Now, up front, you know, you talk about Daniels, but what else do you expect to see rotation-wise with the guys along the defensive line? And, you know, let's set this up a little bit by saying that, of course, Jean-Francois was released
that
after six snaps.
Just absolutely broke my heart. I love that guy. And it has nothing to do with football.
Yeah.
He's like the great, one of the just class acts and smart about football and just a fun guy to talk to. So
he's out.
Let's pour some of our 40 ounces on the ground for Ricky Jean-Francois, because I'm going to miss him.
So he's out, and then essentially it means one of two things. Either A, they feel pretty confident about where Montrevious Adams is, or B, they really like the limited stuff that they saw from Quentin Dial, or C, both of those things are true.
Yeah, I would say C. I would say Quentin Dial's going to play, and it's not like it's a guy they picked off the street who hasn't played football for 6 weeks. The guy was in San Francisco's training camp, so he's ready to go. He just has to learn a little bit about what they do. I think as much as I hate to say this about Ricky, my man, you know, Dial's a better player. Dial's younger. He's just going to be a better player, and they're going to get more out of him. Adams is still, a mystery man, tons of talent, but who knows when he's going to play. He's not playing this week. I watched their practice, and he's still playing scout team, and they're just, I don't think it's even 6 weeks since he broke the foot. So
it might be just barely or right about 6 weeks, yeah.
So I would guess they start pushing him, you know, look for him in October. But, you know, he's still out there and doing stuff. So, that's – I think they didn't want to get rid of Ricky Jean, but they had to do it because they needed the roster spot.
You know, something you said about Dial just jogged my memory a little bit. You mentioned how it's important to remember that this isn't a guy that hasn't played in a while. And that sort of brought me back just really quickly to Devon House. You know, not only had he not played in all of training camp, but essentially the last 10 weeks of the season in Jacksonville last year, he never played.
Yeah.
He played maybe 4 or 5 snaps a
Good
game.
Point.
And
Good
so
point.
This is a guy that hadn't played an actual football game in essentially a calendar year at
yeah.
least.
Okay, so we'll cut him a break for 1 week.
We'll cut him a break for 1 week, and now he just gets to go
out
and cover Julio.
He better not blow contain this week or you know, we're going to be all over him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they're going to match him up with him or if they'll sort of just say, you know, we think Randall and Rollins are playing well
enough.
I don't
think they're going to match up.
I don't either.
They're going to keep their guys where they want them and have force Atlanta to make the decision on where they want to line up Julio Jones. I don't think there's a huge difference between House and Randall. And I actually think Randall is a better player, so that's kind of how I see it.
So let's flip to the other side of the ball and mention a newcomer there. Geronimo Allison back from suspension, and he will be in the game, available. He was on the 53-man roster. He's ready to go. And, of course, this is where he made his debut last year in Week 8. He had a receiving touchdown in that game and then was embarrassed by those old tweets that everybody pulled up from his account during the course of
that game.
And Jordy Nelson was not very happy in the locker room when we wanted to ask Geronimo about those things. The guy just scored his first touchdown. What are you going to ask him about that? Well, if there's something tied to his name where he's misogynistic and all kinds of stuff, we're going to ask about it.
Yeah, and, you know, it's his own doing, you know, and so he needs to mature.
Just imagine if you had Twitter back then, Tom. It would just be a mess when you were 17 and 18 years old.
Some of that stuff was captured that I was thinking now. I'm such a scaredy kid. I would have never said anything like that.
So what kind of a role does he have?
Good question, because I think they're still figuring out roles. I think Sunday was Randall Cobb's day. I think in this game, it could be Martellus Bennett's day, or it could be Devontae Adams' day, or it could be Trevor Davis's day. He's had some nice moments on the Atlanta turf. He had his first touchdown against Atlanta in the regular season last year, plus a really nice punt return. So I think that's going to be a week-to-week ordeal, is who is going to be the main target and how are they going to use guys. I thought they went crazy with all the ways they used Martellus Bennett, lining him up in 6 different positions. Well, actually 8 if you break down the 3 wide receiver positions on the left side and the 3 on the right and then the 2 tight end positions. So he was all over the place. Maybe they get a little more consistent here. Maybe they line him up more in line and try to run the ball a little bit more against Atlanta. I think that's what I would come out doing first and make them stop the run and then, you know, work some play action. So let's see how it goes. But Allison's in the mix. The guy's got a lot of talent.
And, you know, he had a relatively quiet training camp, but toward the end I thought he started to make some really nice plays, especially we didn't see too many leaping catches from him last year, but him and Devontae Adams both have that quality where they can pluck a ball out of the air. And, I mean, Jordy Nelson can to a degree as well, but these guys are different types of athletes, I think.
Yeah, the biggest thing I noticed with Allison is that he put on some muscle.
He
put on some weight, and I don't think he's going to go down on first tackle every single time. So I'm kind of interested to see how that works out for him.
All right, so we have a few questions that we're going to take to close this one out. Are you ready?
I'm all about the questions. Hit me.
We're going to be put on the spot.
Okay.
Okay. How did Jari?
I'll take the fifth.
Okay. How did Jari Evans play in your mind? And part two of that question, you're going to like this: is Mike Daniels the most underrated defensive player in the entire league?
Jari Evans had some rocky moments.
Yes, he did.
He gave up a couple of pressures. He had two penalties. I thought it was a shaky game for him to start out.
The caveat to that is I wonder how much subconsciously he knew that the guy next to him was not ready for that moment in Murphy and that he had to help And so maybe his mind was in two places at once.
Maybe, but you always got to take care of your, you know, your own backyard
right.
first. And he's smart enough to know that.
Mike Daniels?
I just think Evans, you know, he's at the end of his career, and there's going to be some tough moments. The thing that is scary for the Packers is they don't really have anybody to replace them. They don't have even a Lane Taylor, unless they're thinking that Justin McCray can be that type of guy. Anyway, Mike Daniels, most underrated player.
Defensive player in the entire league.
Yeah, I hate those kind of, hyperbole. It's like, I don't know the league well enough to know that he's the most underrated guy in the whole league.
He's a darn good player.
He is a very good, and he's a highly paid player. It's like, you could argue Aaron Donald is underrated based on his salary.
Right.
Mike Daniels is a really good player, and they should be happy they have him, and they have to find a way to not overplay him. And I think he is a little bit underrated. And I'm wondering now, I'm curious to see how Atlanta, whether they swing protection more his way now. Or, you know, maybe they go protecting against Daniels and Perry and leave Matthews.
Very possible.
One-on-one.
Very possible. I'll take this next one. It comes from Scott. And Scott wants to know, how short of a leash does Trevor Davis have as a punt returner? It's a good question. There's no doubt that I would be shocked if Davis went the whole season without muffing a punt. That would blow my mind. And I talked to him a little bit yesterday about what the process is like going into a new dome, adjusting to the lights, adjusting to all that. You know, these guys have to get used to that in every dome they play in. So before the game, they're going to go out, they're going to field a bunch of punts, see what it looks like in the lights, all that stuff. To me, the interesting thing about what Davis said was more about returning punts early in the year versus returning punts later in the year. And what he said is that early in the year, it's not necessarily hard to return it once you get the ball. It's that a lot of times you have no idea where these punters are trying to go because there's not enough reliable film on these special teams units to decide, okay, their pattern is X or their pattern is Y. And so what he said is he's seen teams where they might punt left every single time in the exhibition season. And then once the game starts, they punt to the right, and it's not anything that he's seen before. So that to me was a new element that I hadn't heard a guy talk about before in terms of needing to see a lot of reps of just directions that teams like to go. What do you think? How long of a leash does he have, or how short of a leash?
I think if he muffs a punt right off the bat, they'll have to think about it. Think about using someone else, maybe Cobb. But they want to give him a chance. They want him to at least see. You got to have more opportunities before you judge him, you know. So I think that's what we'll see is they'll give him a chance. Only if he muffs it and loses it right off the bat, or it's in a key situation, and later in the game I don't know. I guess their leash probably isn't that long.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And with all the weapons that they have at the receiver position and tight end together, in theory, if Cobb were to return punts and got hurt, it wouldn't be as much of a loss as it was 3-4 years ago when they played 11 personnel every snap and Cobb had to be out there.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, this one we already touched on a little bit, but I want to point something out, at least from my preference on this question. It's, why did the Packers keep Gunter on the 53 when they knew his skill set was not on par with Pipkins or Hawkins at the bottom of the roster? In my opinion, skill-wise, Gunter is more skilled than both of those guys. Mm-hmm. I just think the only difference is speed. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. But if you ask technique-wise, physicality, the ability to disrupt guys, length, all these different things, maybe not catching the football as Gunter can't catch.
Terrible.
But I think skill-wise, he's more talented than those guys. He just doesn't have the speed.
Smarter. He knows how to play the game. That and special teams. I know during training camp, he could play the fullback position in the punt on punt coverage, make the calls. He could do a lot of that kind of stuff. So that's what kind of separated him. But ultimately, you know, they had to make a decision on just talent. Maybe they just felt like, I think it came down to speed. I think that's what it really came down to. It wasn't going to cost them to keep Gunter and Lindsey Pipkins. So they decided, well, now we got to choose between the two, and they'll go for, you know, they'll let Gunter go.
All right, we'll take one last question. This person pointed out, I saw that Devontae Mays only played twice on special teams, the opening kickoff where he took a bad angle and one other snap.
Is that true?
I don't know if that's – he only played like two snaps or three snaps on special teams. It was really low. Now, the question is, do the Packers really like him better than Aaron Jones on offense?
That's a really good question because I talked to Aaron Jones today Wednesday, and he said it was all special teams. That the reason they told him, the reason he didn't play was special teams. And so they liked Devontae Mays there. Now, that's kind of interesting that he only played that many snaps. I find that really hard to believe.
Let me pull it up here. I've got the snap counts entered in.
One special team snap. Wow. So, you know, in the end, neither back was going to play anyways because of Jamal Williams is the backup, and there's no question he's the backup.
And he only played a handful of snaps, too.
Yeah. He actually played pretty well, you know. He came in right off the bench first carry. It was a 6-yard run.
Yeah, that was a nice run.
But, you know, going into this game, too, they're going to need to have pass protection down all the way. So, you know, maybe Aaron Jones, to me, was a better runner.
I agree.
Right now, ahead of probably the other two, but special teams means a lot to them, I guess.
And that's what those guys will be facing throughout the season because their contributions from scrimmage are going to be small, barring injury. And so it does come down to special teams, something that neither one of those guys did a whole lot of in college. And that's the case with a lot of these draft picks because they've been the main guy at a lot of their schools at their positions, that this is new to them in a lot of ways.
Jones said, you know, he just has to go back to the drawing board and focus really heavily on special teams, which he can do now because he's probably not going to play on offense.
So that's all we've got for you on this episode of the podcast. We'll have one more Friday morning where we look probably again at some matchups, maybe similar to what we did with the Seattle podcast last week, so be sure to check that out Friday morning and check out all of our content on JS Online and PackersNews.com. We got to plug the blog.
Mm-hmm.
How was the performance on the blog?
It was very good. I thought the effort was good. We need better attendance, but I was very pleased with the number of comments. It was like a huge amount of comments, like 4,000 some comments.
And he read every single one of them.
And I read maybe one-tenth of them because they come in so fast I can't see them. But anyway, it was great. Hope to see everyone there Sunday night.
All right. We will talk to you guys soon.